최고.
Chat Retro, the retro chat show where we chat about retro games. I'm your host, Nicholas Bray, and once again I am joined by Mr. Zach Miller. Hello, Zach.
Howdy, howdy. Hey!
You've been peeling a lot of golden bananas?
I have. Well, not as many as I'd like.
Well, if you haven't worked it out, we are definitely going to be talking about Donkey Kong 64 today. We sort of alluded to it at the end of the last one of these segments, but we actually went ahead and started playing it.
We did.
Yeah. So, again, I wouldn't mind starting off with just a little bit of history or like some context to when this game was being developed. So, the game started development in 1997 and was going to be released at the end of 98, apparently. It was originally going to be a 64DD title, but after that died, they moved it back over to being a cartridge game, and it was delayed to the end of 99.
And it needed the expansion pack as a result of not being on the DD.
Well, yeah, they ran into a game-breaking bug that they couldn't work out how to resolve the problem, so they threw the expansion pack in, and it seemed to fix it. So that was the only reason they actually added it in. And it actually caused the profits to take like quite a hit because of that. So yeah, it was a bit unfortunate for Nintendo and Rare, I guess. I'm sure Nintendo didn't really like having to do that.
No.
Just in terms of when it was in development, I find it interesting because it would have been being developed alongside Banjo-Kazooie, I assume.
Yes.
Banjo came out in 98, and I guess maybe a bunch of the Banjo team was moved off. I mean, sorry, DK64 team was moved off to do Banjo and then came back to finish up Donkey Kong.
DK.
Yeah. So, you know, because most people view it as DK borrowing, like, being inspired by Banjo-Kazooie and just trying to one-up it. But I'd have to assume a lot of the design would have been
similar.
Set in stone before, you know, before Banjo came out. So,
yeah.
Maybe a lot of the mistakes that DK64 made aren't necessarily because they just wanted to add more and more to Banjo, but they just didn't realize, you know, in 97, they wouldn't maybe have realized that it was going to be so bad, like tedious.
Yeah.
I'm not saying the game's bad, by the way. I'm just like, you know, the reception of it, the amount of collectibles and things like that.
Yeah, well, what's weird to me is that this game came out after Banjo and probably involved many of the same people,
mm-hmm.
and yet it's such a different game. It's such a, in my opinion, worse game than Banjo-Kazooie.
The thing is, it does share a lot of the similar sort of setup to the way it, like, progresses.
There's an overworld, yeah, there's
yeah,
and individual
just,
stages
just
instead in, of...
Sorry.
Go ahead,
just
you're
in,
right.
Just in terms of the individual, like what you're doing in the levels. Like both games don't feature
structural stuff.
Yeah, don't feature a heavy amount of, I would say, tight like platforming involved. It's more running around helping people or doing little mini games or puzzles or things like that.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, it's not nearly as goal based as something like Super Mario 64.
Yeah, where the stars in Mario 64 are just to signify the end of that mission, really. DK 64 and Banjo are more concerned with actually collecting them, these things.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can basically get them within a few seconds, where that's not generally the case in Mario 64.
Right.
So just before we move on to the meat of this segment, I've pulled up a quote from IGN, actually, from the review of the time. This is from Matt Casamassina. Well, Donkey Kong 64 has finally hit home, and I think the wait has definitely been worth it. The game, while not the leap and bound that Donkey Kong Country was for the Super NES, is still an excellent platformer all the same. It's an epic, gargantuan, huge, giant-sized platformer. It's a game that is packed full of things to do. There is so much that is often overwhelming. The game is every great platformer combined into one package, and that, more than anything else, is what separates it from the competition. So they gave it a 9 out of 10 at the time, and I don't think that is quite... Like, that's not an outlier. It seemed to be relatively well-received with a few gripes from most reviewers I found.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I do remember it being received well, and I seem to remember it just being, you know, hyped as one of the best, or received as one of the best platformers on the system, if not one of the best games on the N64. It came out at the end of the N64's life, and it was kind of seen as this, you know, maximum N64 game. Like, this is what the N64 can do. Look. And, I mean, at the time, that's probably true.
Yep.
But I just don't think it's aged as well as you would expect.
The game definitely looks very, very nice. The levels are all graphically very, very nice to look at and run around. I just find that a lot of the negativity that the gets thrown at the game these days, I guess, comes from maybe a little bit of just simply when it was released and how old the game is in terms of the design, and maybe a little bit about people's expectations. Because these days, if you're going into a platforming game and you don't find a lot of actual platforming, you're probably going to become frustrated.
Yeah.
Because DK64 and even Banjo-Kazooie, to a slightly lesser degree, I would say they're not even really platformers. They're more adventure games that are about exploration and traversal more than simply running and jumping to the end of a checkpoint.
Yeah.
So,
you know, I'd almost say that, especially in Donkey Kong 64, the platforming is the means to an end of getting to a character-specific thingamabob.
Mm.
Like, you platform around so that you can get to a bongo plate, and then use your bongo plate to open a door.
Yeah.
Or you platform around to get to Diddy's jetpack plate. That's the thing about the game. It's like there's so many mini games and plates, and it's like the level design is just an excuse to hide all of these character specific things that you have to do to progress.
Mm.
And many times I find it's kind of two or three characters deep, where you'll activate something with Diddy, but then you got to go in here with Lanky in the door that opens with Lanky, and then you do something with Lanky, and then Donkey Kong's got to go in there and do something else.
Yeah, to a degree. The way I played the game, and I've almost finished it now. I'm on the last level. And the way I ended up playing the game was basically starting with one character and basically completing everything for that character, then moving on to the next one. I wasn't swapping back and forth a lot, unless, like, there is a few times throughout the game where, yeah, you have to swap to open a door to get a character in, but that actually didn't happen as much as I had feared going in. I've actually, like, over the years, because I never played this before, I was under the impression that you had to, like, the game was really going to ramp up and you were swapping characters constantly, which is not really the case. There's a few instances, yeah, but...
Yeah, I actually find that actually gets toned down towards the end of the game, like, the farther you get.
There are some bits where you have to, and some just baffling segments. In there's one in Fungi Forest where there's a tunnel that's gated at the start of it. So, okay, yeah, generally when it's gated, that means that's for a specific character. So, right. I unlocked the door, go through the tunnel. At the other end of the tunnel, there was another gate which needed another character to open that gate.
Right.
So, like, I just don't... Some of the stuff is just weird. Like, why would people at Rare play that and just think, okay, why don't we just have one gate here?
You're right, right.
It doesn't make any sense. Like,
no. And the other thing I don't really appreciate is that when you unlock or when you find a new character, you have to go back through and get all of their stuff. And by that I mean you have to get their musical instrument, you have to get their pop gun shooter, you have to get their special moves from Cranky. I wish that stuff was unlocked with them, like the progression was unlocked with them.
Yeah.
Because you end up, because there's five Kongs, and you gotta repeat a lot of the steps for each one of them, and that got really old. I got through, full disclosure, I got through to unlocking Tiny Kong, not Tiny Kong. I'm sorry, the girl.
Yeah, it's Tiny Kong.
Tiny Kong, and then, dude, why didn't they just use Dixie?
Yeah,
use Dixie.
I kind of thought the same. Like, why invent a new one? But anyway,
yeah.
But you unlock the characters pretty early.
Yeah, you really do. I did not remember unlocking her so quick.
You get the last one, Chunky, on the Frantic Factory level.
Yeah,
and then you've got all of them. So the way I play the game, I completely finished Jungle Japes with Diddy and Donkey. Then moved on to the next one, and when I unlocked Lanky and Tiny, I ended up going back and, like, doing all their stuff first, and then when I got Chunky, I went back to the other two levels and did everything, and then I was sort of set to do just one character at a time for each new level.
Now, one thing I do appreciate about the game, even though you have to repeat some stuff, is everybody's moveset is appreciably different, and I did appreciate that, and everyone's animations are different, and there's nothing stock at all. It's very well thought out, apart from things like the musical instruments, which all do the same thing, but they all look different and they all look kind of cool.
Yeah, all the moves have exactly the same like the way you perform them, activate
inputs
them.
Yeah. Like Smash Brothers.
Yeah, like Smash Brothers, yeah. So, I don't know, the moves were okay. I didn't really find any of them all that impressive. I found Diddy's jetpack was pretty fun.
Oh, yeah.
Some of the character-specific abilities like that are pretty good. Like the DK can be invincible. There's a few cool segments where you got to run through various areas and to get things and stuff like that.
Yeah.
The most stupidest one I found was Chunky can turn invisible.
Right.
And he has to do it for, like, there's no point. He has a switch that he activates in Crystal Caverns, and the banana falls down from the ceiling and you walk 2 feet and pick it up. I don't know. Maybe that comes back in, like, a section that I have yet to play, but there's not much of the game left, and that was the only time he's used it. So
I don't remember Donkey Kong having that many instances of having to be invincible.
There's not that many, but there's at least two or three that I've played out so far.
Yeah, but in, like, the whole scheme of the game, everyone uses all their stuff pretty well, except those two are kind of funny to me.
I, I generally like the Diddy and the Tiny segments the most, because Tiny gets, well, it's Tiny, and goes into these specific areas where it's kind of fun to find those and explore those
segments. Kind of Minish Cap-y.
Yeah, it basically is Minish Cap. Mm.
I wish you could just activate Diddy's rocket barrel wherever you wanted. I don't know why they put it a specific character plate on from where you had to start. But, man, I like zooming around on that thing. I think it controls pretty well.
Yeah, it is a little when you first start using it, you do have to get used to it. But once you are used to it, it's fun to fly around. And if you've got a lot of those like the consumables that those moves take up.
The coconut crystals.
Yeah, the coconut crystals. You can just fly around for quite a while, because I'm in the creepy castle level now, and that level's all about verticality. So I just basically, with Diddy, I just got in his jetpack and flew around trying to just to see if I'd missed any of the bananas and things like that.
Yeah.
The colored bananas. Actually, going back to when I started this game, because I sort of dabbled in it early on and turned it off before really doing anything, and there's a lot of the stuff in the beginning of this game is just, it sort of overwhelms you a little bit, because you're not sure the progression and all of these different items and houses. Because when I got into the first level in Jungle Japes, I found the snide guy.
Yeah.
For the blueprints.
He's funny. I actually like him as a character. He might be my favorite character in the game.
Yeah, but he was asking for blueprints. I was sort of like, do I have to get these? Is this a separate thing? With Cranky and Candy and all that. I was like, oh, so they give me moves, I guess. I got to pay them for it. I was like, oh, great. I got to pay them for it. But actually, that was not a problem at all. I've got hundreds of those, banana coins that you have to use to pay for things.
Yeah.
That's very easy. I was worried there was going to be a certain amount that you, they made the...
exactly the number of banana coins you need in the game.
Yeah, in the game. So you'd have to make sure you got every single one. But no, there's tons and tons of them around.
Yeah, I think a bigger problem is finding those, there'll be five bananas that you're missing in a level, and you're like, where the heck are these bananas? And they're in some weird location that you'd never go.
You're talking about the colored bananas?
Yeah.
I didn't really have any problem with those. When going into the game, I thought those were going to be much closer to the notes in Banjo. In Banjo, it can be really annoying. You might have 85 of 100, and because in Banjo they're all individual notes, it's very easy to miss two or three in an area, and then the draw distance kills you because you have to get really close before you can even see them.
Yeah.
So I was worried that the bananas in this game are going to be like that, but I was kind of happy to see that they mainly use the single bananas to guide you to areas of interest where that Kong needs to go. And then for the other ones, there might just be floating balloons worth 10 or those bunches of bananas that are worth 5.
Yeah.
So it was never a problem. There was only a couple of times where I was missing 5 or 10, and I just had to, I explored for a little bit longer, or I actually bought a guide with this game. So
it's a good idea.
Just flipped open to a map, and so I found where those bananas, all the bananas were, and it's like, I'm probably missing someone from here, and just went back there and grabbed them. So
that's good. Yeah, but when I remember when I first had this game on N64, I was a completionist for the bananas, and I did not have a guide, and I was going a little crazy, a little OCD with the banana hunting in that game. I got them all eventually, but I kind of hated myself for doing it, because you don't get anything. Mm. You don't actually need to collect all the bananas to beat the game.
Well, you do to get the proper ending, right? You need to get absolutely everything
to get the real ending, the dolphin ending.
Ooh, I've got everything so far, so I'm probably going to get the 100% completion on it.
There you go. So what do you think of the music? I think the music is really good. I think it's maybe the best part of the game.
Yeah, it is really good. It's Grant Kirkhope of Banjo-Kazooie fame and Rareware fame, and now he's on Project Ukulele as well. I mean, yeah. Ukulele. Yeah, the music's good. I'd even loaded that up on YouTube at work and just listened to a few tracks every now and then.
Nice.
That and like some other game music and stuff.
I think is it the haunted house that's it's just a bunch of laughing and cackling.
Is that the creepy castle? That's the one I'm on now.
That's so creepy castle. Yeah,
it's got actual a bit of music, like, you know, like some ominous sort of music, and yeah, I guess there's like some ambient things like that. I haven't really thought about it too much because a lot of the music isn't in your face. It's sort of the same mindset that games like Ocarina of Time use. There's musical tracks, but they can be sort of low key and you don't really like get sick of them.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And they blend into the background very well. You're not thinking about it when you're listening to it.
Mm.
Which I appreciate, but when you sit and listen to the music in Ocarina of Time's a good example of this too, and you just sit there and listen to the music, it's really good.
Mm.
But yeah, that cackling track might be one of my my favorite track from this game because it's so creative. I've never heard a video game track that's basically cackling over an ominous theme. It's really unique.
Another thing that I think the game is smart to do and I guess needed is that there are no lives in the game.
Yes.
You can die and just retry things. There's no penalty really for doing anything wrong.
True.
You don't lose any bananas. Imagine how frustrating this would have been if you left a level or whatever, you had to go get all the colored bananas again.
Oh my gosh.
It would have just been in...
It sure wouldn't have gotten a 9 back then, that's for sure.
Yeah, no one would have finished the game.
No.
As we were sort of alluding to earlier as well, a lot of the levels are basically sort of conduits for a lot of mini-games and puzzles. Not everything, but most levels have mini-games in them.
Yeah.
So how did you find the mini-games, like, in this playthrough or in previous playthroughs?
I think a lot of them, you know, they're okay. I think a few, I don't like time things.
Mm.
So any of the time mini games I found a little, I'd finish them like right at the buzzer. Yeah. Cause a lot of them are kind of trial and error. They're stupid mazes where you have to find all the enemies. Mm. And then I found that almost every Donkey Kong Barrel Blast minigame required a level of precision that I did not love.
You have to have the cursor directly over the barrel.
Directly over it. And if you are not directly over it, Donkey Kong will actually phase through the barrel as he misses.
Yep.
And, oh, that pisses me off. But, you know, it's nice that you can just literally redo it as soon as you get back.
The thing I hate about a lot of the mini games, though, is when you fail, there's this arbitrary like animation, or yeah, like with the barrel one, you'd be kicked back to the level, then you just got to push the Z button again to fly back into doing it again.
Yeah.
And a lot of the other mini games too, if you fail,
you just start again.
It'll say, "Do you want to try again?" But it'll then run the stupid cutscene and the explanation of how to play the game again.
Yeah.
And I just like keep mashing the A button to get past it. So they should, when you retry something, they really should have just made it. It was like 3, 2, 1, go.
Yeah.
Start again. No like needed explanations or anything.
Yeah, that's true. It's a strange. It's their obviously their way of bringing the bonus stages back from the Donkey Kong Country games.
The problem with that though is like these aren't so much bonus stages anymore. They're
right.
They're too used too heavily. They should have been in secret areas and the reward instead of a golden banana, the reward was simply unlocking the game from like to play from the menu.
or something. Oh, there you go.
The same with the way the collectibles are done in this game. Like, why have every character collect the same things? Why not? They should have made Donkey Kong go after bananas, like Lanky go after the blueprints.
There you go.
Tiny go after something else, and they should have diversified even more where they go in the levels to do that.
Agreed.
They would have cut down on the collection, and you still would have had a bit of that, you know, swapping characters and each character having a goal to do. And
but you're not necessarily revisiting the exact same places all the time with everybody.
Yeah, and collecting exactly the same items.
Yeah, like you'll be wandering around and you'll be a, you know, Donkey Kong, getting some bananas, getting some banana coins. Oh, this here's some ghosted red bananas. Better switch to Diddy.
Mm.
You know, that got kind of old for me.
If they were to remake this game, I would want them to do something like that, like do some drastic changes like that, and also make the character switching a button command so you can just do it
yes.
whenever you want.
Oh my god, yes.
Instead of having to go to the barrel. Even though there is a lot of the barrels.
There are a lot
about,
of barrels, but yeah, but
still, there's no real point in having the barrel. They should have just made it you could swap, just like in Donkey Kong Country.
Yeah.
You could push select to switch characters or whatever.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if you've ever, you probably haven't, but I would like to espouse the virtues of the game's multiplayer shooter mode.
I haven't actually been able to play the multiplayer, but I'm sort of keen.
It's actually pretty fun. I mean, it's not great. It's kind of a broken game,
yeah.
But it's fun in the same way that Metroid Prime 2 multiplayer is fun. It's not... Mm. You know, it's obviously not well thought out, but it's fun for what it is. It's fun for the chaos that ensues.
Well, my friends and I used to play a lot of the Banjo-Tooie multiplayer mini games. So
I don't remember that game having multiplayer mini games.
Yeah, it's got a ton. It's even got the first person shooter multiplayer.
Oh, jeez, wow!
Which is in the main game, but the multiplayer version. They actually use levels from GoldenEye, just retexture the walls. So you've got like
that
the
makes
complex,
sense. It really
complex
does.
And a few other. There's only like three levels, I think, but I think at least one or two of them were just stolen from GoldenEye.
Oh, that's funny. And GoldenEye was 97, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So it's so funny that like these three giant games came out 1 year after another, and then Banjo-Tooie came out 2000. Like in 2000.
Yep.
I mean, I think Rare, aside from Nintendo, might have been the most prolific developer on the N64.
I think they beat Nintendo just in terms of the sheer amount of games.
Ish.
I mean, you had Blast Corps, Diddy Kong Racing.
Oh, Blast Corps, yeah.
Donkey
Bring
Kong 64.
Bring that back.
Banjo-Kazooie, Banjo-Tooie, Jet Force Gemini, Perfect Dark. Did I say GoldenEye?
Yeah, you didn't say GoldenEye.
That's like eight games. Already.
Yeah.
Mickey Speedway USA.
Oh,
anyway.
They did that? I didn't know
yeah.
that. Oh, wow.
Anyway, we're getting off topic, so let's take it back to Donkey Kong. A lot of people complain about the fact that you have to get the Rare and Nintendo coins in the game. Did you ever have problems with that?
I don't remember having problems with that. You know what I'm having problems with right now are the banana fairies. How the heck do you collect them?
You get a camera and you go to take a photo of them.
Oh, okay. I don't remember that, but yeah.
Yeah, I think you... I'm not sure where you get it. You might have to go to the banana fairy shrine in the hub world.
Yeah.
Which is just... That's just another thing that... Why?
The hub world's not bad. I kind of like exploring the hub world, although it's not very big.
It's not very big, and it's not really that much. It's not really anything to do, really, aside from going to the levels.
Yeah, that's true. It'd be nice if it were a little more interactive. Maybe there were some golden bananas in there.
There are golden bananas in there.
Oh, there are. Okay.
I should take that back. There are things to collect in there, but it's just the same old sort of things. Like, it's basically another level. You've got the same requirements that you have in all the other levels. So you got five golden bananas for every character.
Oh, wow.
The blueprints, all that stuff, yeah.
Okay. I'm going to have to do some more exploring. Now, I will say that, I mean, it's obviously not my favorite rare N64 game.
Mm-hmm.
It's not my favorite N64 platformer, but I think kind of the core assets of the game, the music, the graphics, the even the level design, apart from the all the mini games and character specific plates, I think there's a strong base. The game does have a strong base.
Yeah, yeah.
I just think they kind of went a little too far in a direction with it, away from the Mario 64 and towards Banjo-Kazooie, but more yeah. than Banjo-Kazooie, you know.
Mm.
And I would kind of like to see a Donkey Kong, 3D Donkey Kong game developed that was a little more like either the Donkey Kong Country games or Mario 64 kind of game.
I'd actually like to have a new 3D Donkey Kong game that is more of a, I'm not sure exactly how you'd structure it, but more of an open world where you can go in any direction and find, I don't know, it might just be like, you know, Donkey Kong trying to find different things, or there's mainly more platforming challenges and exploration though. Like imagine yeah. if you just drop down into a pretty large jungle sort of world, and over and to the right there was a bunch of ruins and stuff. Forward yeah. there was like a lagoon and things like that. You know, swinging through the trees and everything could be fun. But yeah, DK64, they did take it possibly too far. But I do have enjoyed running around the levels. It is still actually kind of enjoyable, even though around the halfway point of the game, you kind of just want it to be over in a way.
Yeah.
Not like, you know.
Well, it's because you're doing the same stuff the whole game. And
yeah, because I thought there was...
You eventually reach a breaking point.
There's actually more worlds than I expected there to be, so...
That's true. There are actually a lot of levels. And the levels themselves are very differentiated. They're actually kind of cool looking.
Mm.
And I think the weakest level is Jungle Japes just because it's so tiny. It's itty bitty.
Yeah, it is small.
Compared to all the other ones.
But that was necessary, I think, because sure. you need to learn. Because like I was even saying, I've sort of felt overwhelmed at when I first started entering that level and working out what to do exactly.
Yeah.
But once you sort of understand how to progress in the game, it's all very easy. But
yeah.
Frantic Factory was all right. That was like a very enclosed level where there's lots of different passageways. And it was a little confusing to run around in that one. Like just remembering which tunnel took you to which room.
Yeah, there's no map. This game could use a map in a future remake.
Some of the levels are harder to have to sort of create that mental map in your mind. Which actually that Frantic Factory level is sort of the same problem I have with the Water Temple in Ocarina.
Oh yeah.
Because it's a lot of different rooms going off in different directions.
Yeah, very much so.
But I would recommend this game to get the DK arcade game basically.
Oh yes, and Jetpack.
And Jetpack. It's all right, but the DK arcade game is the best version that you can get.
Yes, true.
There is all the versions on the Virtual Console, the just modified versions of the NES game, which is not all that accurate.
Not nearly especially, as hard.
Especially in terms of music and things.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And they left it in. I'm glad they left that in and Jetpack in this game.
Yeah, yeah, because you're playing on the Wii U, so it's good that they left that in. It just, if like people that play the DK arcade game in DK64, I mean, it'll just look a whole lot better than the Virtual Console one.
Oh yeah, yeah.
The standalone game.
But I'm glad we played this game. I, you know, because I hadn't played it since it first came out, honestly, yeah. and I completed it, and I never really went back to it. But I will probably keep playing this a little bit here and there, especially because it's on the Virtual Console and I have access to it all the time. I don't have to unpack a system from my closet. The one thing that is sad to me is that there's big black bars on the left and right side of the screen, and I wish I could see more of the level.
Well, if you wanted to go about it to fix that. It's a bit of a like long way to fix it, but you go back, if you went to the system menu on the Wii U and changed your output to 480p and then went back into the game, you could activate the widescreen mode from the menu in DK64.
Because nice.
the problem with it at the moment is 1080p, the Wii U will force the 4x3 image, because the widescreen in like DK64 is accomplished by basically you putting a 16:9 image inside the 4x3
block.
So the way to stretch it out, you have to set your Wii U to 480p, set your TV to 16:9, and then change the option in DK64.
You know, they did the same thing with Turok 2. I don't know if you ever played Turok 2.
But no.
If you played that with the expansion pack, you could do the same thing. You could activate a widescreen mode that was just widescreen in that box, and it didn't necessarily look any better because it was still a small image. But
at least it takes up the screen for you. Like
if you don't
like having the black bars on the sides, you could do that just to fill the image more. I'm not sure if it takes a performance hit. It could if it actually is rendering slightly wider, but.
I might mess with that tonight.
It would be interesting to get your thoughts on how it looks going that way, because then you'd have your TV scaling it to 1080p, so it might, the image quality might look worse, but I don't know. It'd probably be fairly close.
It's a good experiment to do.
Mm. Rare were good about that in the 64 days. They added a whole bunch of different technical options. Most of their games later on supported surround sound, I'm sure, right?
That's true.
A lot of them had widescreen options, like Jet Force Gemini, Perfect Dark, and GoldenEye both did. They actually even have the the more like cinema widescreen sort of mode. So it's not 16:9; it's the even narrower version to get that cinematic look.
Mm. I seem to recall, you know, Perfect Dark was already pretty frame rate bad.
Yeah,
but I recall being at a friend's house and trying to put that game in the 16:9, and it really took a hit at 16:9.
Yeah,
but it looked cool.
So overall, I like playing DK64. The camera, yeah, okay, it can be a little finicky.
The camera is not great.
Because you have to keep pushing the C buttons to move it, maneuver it, or hold down the R button. Or there is an option menu to make it
move more.
To follow the character. It's set to free camera by default, I think. But if you change it to follow, it'll be basically like you're holding R.
Holding R down, yeah. And that's definitely the way to do it.
Yeah, because the camera does, like, when it's on follow, it tends to be a bit more manageable and easy to see what's happening.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm going to keep playing it. I've almost finished it, so I may as well. This far in, I may as well finish the game.
You should. I'd like to get your. I'd like to hear your take on the final boss. The fight with K. Rool is actually pretty interesting.
Yeah, I have sort of seen bits and pieces of that over the years. It's like a boxing match, right? And
yeah.
You basically have to fight with each Kong, which is pretty good. That's a pretty good use of the characters to come together at the end and to switch out to fight him. That seems pretty interesting.
Yeah, it is. I like that fight.
All right, so I'm not sure there's anything else to talk about, so we'll leave it at that, I think, Zach.
Yeah, we'll figure out the next game to play, and maybe we'll announce it on Twitter so people can start playing with us whenever we decide what it's going to be.
Hey, yeah, that's a good idea. And because just by circumstance, I ended up picking Diddy Kong Racing, and I thought this one would just be a logical next one to talk about because it had recently come out on the Wii U. So I'm leaving the next game choice up to you entirely, Zach.
Oh, I'm going to be drunk with power.
Yeah. I don't know. You're not going to pick something so terrible that you don't like it, so.
No, that's true. No, I'm not going to. No. Although there are terrible games that I have a soft spot for.
Mm.
But I'll try not to pick any.
Alrighty. So until next time, keep playing retro games.
Yeah.
See yous.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this week's Connectivity. If you'd like to send us an email, please send them into connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. And if you enjoy Connectivity, please consider reviewing and rating us on iTunes. With E3 next week, we will most likely post the audio from the Nintendo News Report video about the Nintendo Digital event on the Connectivity feed, so please look forward to that. And for the following proper Connectivity episode, we will most likely be doing a big recap on E3 with our thoughts on the various announcements after the dust has settled a bit. There will be a lot more E3 podcasts and videos coming from Nintendo World Report next week, so please keep checking the site to find out about all that great coverage. This week, the playout song will be the Donkey Kong Country Aquatic Ambience theme from the Symphonic Legends concert, which featured arrangements of some of Nintendo's greatest hits, conducted by Nicholas Willen and performed by the WDR Radio Orchestra of Cologne, Germany in 2010. Thanks for listening. Thank you.